You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org. There's an app for that.
Any organization whose first priority is evangelization should never take a penny from the government.
The etiquette of contemporary postmodern America is that all persons should just stand beside one another and say, we're together in spite of all of our differences. But what that really implies is a relativity of truth.
The reason some Lutheran pastors and congregations no longer practice closed communion is because they simply are no longer willing to insist on the doctrine of the Lord's Supper in the Lutheran confessions.
Confessional Lutheran deadheads love Issues Etc.
Well, 30 years ago, they were warning us, they were assuring us that we were facing a demographic disaster, the likes of which the world had never seen. The world was growing too full, too populous. It was the population bomb. Many of you remember famous book of that very title that turned out to be, well, what? Completely false. Actually, our problem, especially here in the U.S., but it's not limited to the U.S., but especially for us Americans, the problem hasn't turned out to be too many people. It's turned out to be too few. How much of our present economic, sociological dilemma that we find ourselves in as a nation can be attributed to the fact that, well, I mean, to put it rather basically, we've stopped having babies. And when we have, we've had fewer than it takes to replace the two that it takes to make one or two or three. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Wednesday afternoon. It's the 20th of February. Jonathan Last joins us, senior writer for the Weekly Standard, to talk about America's population implosion rather than explosion. In the first half hour of the program, a little bit later, Dr. Alfonso Espinosa will join us. Why do we need the Lord's Supper? Answer that question. Very simple half hour or so. And then Pastor Peter Bender joins us in hour two. We're going to kick off the beginning of a four-part series with him on the office and the responsibilities of a pastor. Today we're going to talk about instruction in Christian doctrine and confession and absolution. I would call it catechesis and confession. That's just the beginning of the responsibilities in the office of a pastor. That's hour two of Issues, etc. You can join us for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at IssuesETC. Jonathan Last is a senior writer at the Weekly Standard, and he's author of the new book, What to Expect When No One's Expecting America's Coming Demographic Disaster. Jonathan, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hey there, Todd.
You've written in your book, and I'm very curious about what you mean by this. You say, if you have carefully ordered your life in such a way as to provide the maximum amount of pleasure for yourself, children won't just change your life, they will utterly and completely destroy it. What do you mean by that?
Do you ever fall asleep on the sofa? It's a beautiful fall day. You're watching some NFL football. You watch the 1 o'clock game. It's a good game. The 4 o'clock game starts. And, you know, right around the second quarter, you know, you've been sitting on the couch having some Doritos and maybe a little bit of soda or some iced tea. You just sort of doze off, and, you know, that gorgeous fall sky is slowly moving towards dusk. And you just sort of catnap for like 25 minutes in the middle of a Sunday afternoon on the sofa. And this is like the nearest thing there is to heaven. And once you have a kid, you will never do that again. You know, and I don't mean that, like, you know, you cut back on those football cat naps by 60% or 80% or 90%. They will never, ever happen again. That's gone. That old life is gone. And that's what I mean by that. That, you know, all the things that we think of as being, you know, product of the really good life, having, you know, croissants and espresso on a Saturday morning while you page through the Wall Street Journal very carefully, looking at the weekend review section or the book review, falling asleep at night as you're making your way through Middlemarch or reading some G.K. Chesterton or something like that, these, you know, high-minded intellectual pursuits, that's all gone once you have kids. You just don't have the time for any of that anymore.
Well, if you're trying to sell me.
Yeah, exactly.
So
boy, do I have something you should do with your free time tonight.
So what is the What is the upside if that's the downside?
Well, there's not a ton of that. This isn't true. Look, there are upsides. There are, at the end of the day, the idea that happiness, that football cap naps, or even reading Middlemarch is like the highest expression of human flourishing, is probably not right. There are probably bigger, deeper things to the human experience, and being a parent and having children probably contribute to that. That's the high-minded sort of theological or philosophical view. The other more practical utilitarian view would be simply this: nobody likes going to the dentist either. But when you're 65 and you still have all your teeth, then you appreciate having gone to the dentist a couple times a year. And in a lot of ways, children are like that. They are good for the overall health of the society. They do nice things like pay for our Social Security benefits when they grow up and get jobs and pay taxes. And so I would say from either the purely utilitarian sort of societal perspective or the deeper philosophical slash theological perspective, I think you could construct a nice case for children. But I just am not sentimental about it, and I'm not one of those people who go around saying that, oh, they're just little blessings every minute. Treasure these times.
How would American life, the fabric of American society, and this is a very broad question, obviously, but both economic and sociological, how would it be different had we not been systematically, at least through unofficial policies, reducing the birth rate in the U.S. over the last 35, 40 years?
Well, we wouldn't be as old as a society. One of the things that happens when your fertility rate drops, and in fact the prime thing that happens that makes us worry about all the other downstream causes, downstream effects, is that your age profile inverts. If you sort of think about what the age profile of a healthy society looks like, the fattest portions of it, the largest populations, are the people who have just been born because they haven't had a chance to die off yet. And those, your profile is basically the same as it moves up, and then it begins, the cohorts begin shrinking towards the top of the age pyramid as people begin, shuffling off into the undiscovered country. When your fertility rate stays depressed and below the replacement level for a prolonged period of time, that all inverts, and so you wind up with more people in the older cohorts than you have in the younger cohorts. And this then creates all the other problems we have. All of a sudden the whole country starts to look like Florida, basically. It creates enormous stresses on entitlement programs like Medicare and Social Security. It drives you into economic stagnation. It sort of depresses consumption. It depresses innovation and technological advance, and then creates other downstream ill effects as well.
Is part of the, some have called it the Great Recession, speaking economically, is part of its major cause this kind of unseen demographic?
Over here, we don't know yet. We don't actually know what it is. I think you could make a large case that the economic recession, at least as we are experiencing it right now, the precipitating event was both the housing bubble and then the sort of financial derivatives bubble, which caused that. Now, the question then is, as far as the length of this recession, if this broadens out into a decade, if it broadens out into more than a decade, and all of a sudden we look like Japan then with their lost decade that is now in its 23rd year, that's a heck of a decade, then I think we can start looking and wondering if the demographics have already begun to contribute to that. Now, one would hope that it is still early enough in the day here that we aren't going to feel those ill effects yet. And that's one of the reasons I wrote the book, was to try to start the discussion now before we get to the point where it's really dragging down our economy.
Speaking of Japan, among others, give us a few examples outside the U.S. where the effects of this demographic of a low birth rate, in many cases much lower than replacement levels, in some countries, have had obvious effects that simply cannot be denied. Give us a few examples.
Well, Japan is example A, because they are the furthest out on this trend line. The Japanese are basically the canary in the coal mine, the first ones heading over the demographic cliff. So they have right now enormous entitlement problems. They just don't have enough workers to support their retirees. They have, as I said, they're in the middle now of the 23rd year of an economic recession, which, if you think back to the 1980s, the Japanese were totally dominating the global economy. We were all going to have to learn how to speak Japanese one day. But even then, even at the height of their powers, Japanese demographers were warning the country's policymakers and elites that they did not have the people infrastructure to maintain that economic advance and that bad things were going to happen. They were right. And right now you have in Japan a couple things happening. You have enormous stresses on the welfare state. You have a continuing contraction of the economy. you have literally land depopulating. About half the country is now classified as marginal or depopulated land. And you have brewing a generational conflict, which I think is potentially destabilizing to any social order. Just a few weeks ago, Japan's finance minister came out and said that it was time for the country's elderly to, quote, hurry up and die. This is a problem, and I think, and maybe it'll be fine. Maybe the Japanese will figure out a way out of this without actually getting to, you know, Sarah Palin-esque death panels or something like that. But, you know, I always believe that we like to think that our sort of Western liberal order, which is lovely and wonderful, we like to think that it is perpetual and self-perpetuating. And I think that's actually a dangerous fallacy to hold to. Things do fall apart. Sometimes the center does not hold. And to the extent that we could, you know, think carefully about what we're doing and try to avoid getting into a zero-sum game where all of a sudden you are making hard choices. You know, either the elderly are not going to have promises kept to them, or we're going to so increase the tax burden on the young people that it makes it even harder for them to have families. We should stay away from generational conflict like the Japanese are having.
With only about 30 seconds here before a break, any other examples that you could just tick off for us where, if we look at their numbers, Greece should see the future?
Greece is a perfect example of the future. China, actually. China is beginning to experience labor shortages in the manufacturing sector already, and that's why Japanese demographers have been, to the extent they can speak openly, have been begging the government to consider scrapping the one-child policy, because they are also beginning to feel the effects of all of this. South Korea is next. And you look over in Europe, Germany is seeing this right now. Germany has their own economic problems as well. They have problems particularly in the former East, where the fertility rate is just utterly abysmal.
Jonathan Last is our guest. We're talking about America's population implosion on this Wednesday afternoon, February the 20th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Jonathan is a senior writer at the Weekly Standard. He's authored the new book, What to Expect When No One's Expecting America's Coming Demographic Disaster.
Now what can be done for you? You book it in two. Too many people.
I'm not a Christian, but I listen to your show because actually you do have some interesting topics.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
Do you believe that there's not one error in the Bible? That's intellectually infantile. You also believe that Jesus is coming again. You promote extremely sexually repressive views.
The Issues Etc. comment line, available 24/7, 618-223-8382.
Have fun waiting for Jesus to return. Got news for you. He ain't coming back.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The Virtual Organist Service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
What happens when you take solid doctrine and solid curriculum and combine them with ancient scholars and modern technology? You get Wittenberg Academy, the very first completely online classical Lutheran high school. We are unabashedly Lutheran and offer families a rigorous standard of academic excellence. Students can pick and choose classes, or they can utilize our entire curriculum for their high school education. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the logo for the Issues Etc. Journal and Weekly Bulletin insert at issuesetc.org and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org, look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo, and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Wednesday afternoon, we're talking about America's population implosion. Jonathan Last of the Weekly Standard is our guest. Jonathan, earlier in our history, I think we could make the case that large families were not only viewed as kind of an economic necessity, they were valued as part of the fabric of American society. What has happened to the American dream such that Americans no longer believe that that is true?
We know that it's a big, complicated question. There are literally thousands of factors that have gone into that. There's things like the decline in infant mortality, the increasing urbanization and decreasing rural parts of life, increasing industrialization and moving away from agriculture, education, contraception, abortion, all of these things have factored into it. And to a large degree, we have downsized our expectations in what family life should be. But one of the things that struck me as I was researching the book is that when demographers measure ideal fertility, that is the number of kids that men and women say they would like to have in a perfect world. In America, our ideal fertility number has actually been the same for 40 years now. It's remained virtually unchanged. And so to a large degree, what we have done is we have sort of accidentally downsized our fertility here without meaning to. It isn't just that people have decided they don't want babies. Certainly some people have, and you know, and I say to them, God bless you. I'm not here to argue that you should be having kids if you don't want them. But that isn't the median experience in American life right now. The average person in America wants to have 2.5 kids in a perfect world. They just aren't getting there. And so to a large degree, what we're seeing is, as I said, sort of unintended consequences of the evolution of modern life.
Why aren't they getting there? Why, if they want that demographic kind of happy medium, why not the 2.5 kids?
Well, and as I said, it's complicated. You have cultural factors, you have economic factors, you have the rise of cohabitation and the rise of divorce, which has assaulted the institution of marriage. Marriage, you know, is incredibly important to, just as a demographic matter, incredibly important to achieving your fertility ideals. If you don't get married at a reasonably young age, meaning before like age 40, and you don't stay married for a long period of time, it is difficult to achieve your fertility ideals. And so divorce and cohabitation both eat at that. You look at the economics, and it has become much more expensive to raise children than it was 30 or 40 years ago. Real dollar increases, not just cost of inflation. College has played a big part of this. College decreases your fertility in all sorts of ways, one of which is that it gives you a debt burden as you get out, that people report that it makes them reluctant to start families. It makes children going forward prospectively more expensive because it's about a fifth of the total cost of raising a child gets tied up in college. And then there's just the problem of simple biology. If you're not graduating from college until you're 22 or 23, you then begin pushing back the average age of first marriage. This pushes back the average age of first birth. And then if you're not having a child until you're 28 or 29, which is about what the number is right now in America on average, you then run up against the wall at 35. For women, it becomes increasingly difficult to conceive. And so you wind up, again, with people, unless you begin, you know, really packing those kids very closely together, it becomes hard, just as a practical matter, to achieve your fertility goals.
So if we have this situation now, we can see the possible future in the examples that you mentioned before. Let's talk about specifically some of the things that have made it more expensive or made it more difficult, and in particular economically. Why has it become more expensive to have children, which obviously for most people does act at least as an unconscious disincentive to having more?
Well, college is a big part of it. Then you wind up with, once you begin having two-income families, you then are experiencing lost spousal wages of some sort. And if not, then you're incurring very, very high child care costs. And so, you know, all of these things merge with the increases in cost, you know, vitamins and health care and strollers. And in a lot of ways, we've sort of gotten a little bit crazy in our consumerism. I think sort of the consumerist impulse, which is, I would say, the dark side of the free market, the dark side of capitalism, has really manifested itself in crazy ways in the parenting world. If you look at, you know, the Bugaboo strollers, which can start at $800, I think, go up to about $1,100, and crazy cribs, and, you know, children's clothing stores that sell organic children's clothing, because it's not enough to have organic food for your kids. You have to have organic clothes as well that they're going to wear for 3 months before they outgrow them. All these things contribute to make it more expensive. And you know, this is really all the legacy of, as I said, you know, increasing urbanization and industrialization. Once children are no longer help on the farm, you know, when you're living in the, you know, 1850s in a rural setting, then, you know, they become cost centers.
Very expensive accessories? Am I being too cynical there?
Well, yeah, in a certain way. I mean, this is, I think, what people who have one kid and then tap out after that probably find is that, you know, there are all sorts of, as I say, there are all sorts of reasons to have a first kid, you know, either naivety or your own sense of your own sense of vanity, and so in that sense, having a kid can become an act of self-actualization, I think. But I think people who do have kids for those reasons find out very quickly that that's a bad trade-off. The best reasons to have kids are sort of deeper philosophical ones.
Talk about the role, and you mentioned it in passing before, of contraception and abortion in this demographic trend.
So abortion is a little bit tricky. If you look at the abortion numbers post-Roe, once you get all of the abortions legal and on the books following Roe, you then get an 100% increase in the annual abortion rate over the first 10 years. This suggests that a lot of those abortions, basically Roe was creating demand for abortions, and many of those abortions in the first 10 years might very well have been converted to live births. However, since Roe, we've had now 54, 55 million abortions, and what the numbers have shown over the last 30 years is a little bit different in a lot of ways. When you look at the demographics of people who are getting abortions, it looks like abortion has become sort of birth control of last resort. And so it seems possible, or maybe even likely, that many of those abortions simply wouldn't have been pregnancies absent Roe. So they, in other words, would not have been live birth. The RAND Corporation did a study on this a few years ago trying to actually hang a number on this and figure out how much abortion had contributed to the decline in the American fertility rate. And what they found was that it was a reasonably small influence. Smallest for white Americans, pretty much negligible, slightly larger for Hispanics. The only ethnic group where it really showed an influence was among African Americans, and there it was reasonably robust, actually. This is just one more way in which, you know, as you look through all of the social ills, and I think, you know, we can consider abortion a social ill, even if you're on the pro-choice side. I mean, nobody wants to wind up with abortion. There's just one more way in which the African-American community has really suffered the worst, you know, in the decline of marriage, suffered the worst in the increase of cohabitation, suffered the worst in divorce, suffered the worst in abortion. And it really, I would say, represents just an ongoing tragedy in America.
What about contraception?
So contraception is a wonderful lesson in the power of unintended consequences. So the birth control pill is Margaret Sanger's brainchild. She begins agitating for birth control pill actually in about 1912. And her goal for the birth control pill is to stop the breeding of what she calls the dysgenic types and the bad races who come from, her words, the slums and jungles. And she wants more babies from the fit, again, her words, and fewer from the unfit. And this is what she says is the goal of the birth control pill. You know, Margaret Sanger was basically a racist crank. So the birth control pill comes out finally, thanks to Margaret Sanger and her friend Catherine McCormick, and it turns out that it is used disproportionately by very well-educated, well-to-do white women, Margaret Sanger's people, essentially. And she would have found the birth control pill, I think, to be a real problem and not exactly what she had hoped for it to be. And it's, as I said, it's a real example of how when you begin monkeying with really big, big, powerful societal factors, things like the birth control pill, things like, for instance, changing the divorce laws, which also happened around the same time, you can really never predict what's going to happen. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, all of my, you know, vaguely proposed solutions in what to expect are really terribly modest, in truth, and probably inadequate. But that's because I do believe and worry that, you know, whenever you start talking about, you know, making big changes, oftentimes you just can't predict what the unintended consequences and side effects are going to be.
What role has immigration played in possibly even mitigating the effects or dampening the apparent effects here?
Well, certainly it has mitigated many of the worst effects here in America. You know, the political side of the immigration debate, I'm actually very squishy on because in my own sort of sense, both sides have very legitimate concerns and very legitimate worries. But from a purely demographic perspective, without the immigration we've experienced over the last 30 years, we would be Europe. If you just run the numbers stripping out immigrants over the last 30 years and their progeny and their fertility rates, we look very much like Europe. And so whatever its other problems or benefits, immigration has bought us probably 20 or 30 years of extra time to figure out our problem. Now, there is one problem with immigration, just demographically speaking, and that is that while it can buoy your population numbers and while it can buoy your fertility rate, it does not give the rejuvenating effect on your age profile that making babies the old-fashioned way does. This is just a sort of complicated statistical and mathematical point. But that said, without it, we would be in greater trouble. The question is, even if we decided as a country and as a society that we wanted to continue with the massive immigration we have received, would that be possible? Would the supply remain in perpetuity? A lot of demographers believe that this may not be the case. Once countries dip below the replacement level, they historically stop sending immigrants outward into the world. Central and South America are the source of most of our immigrants and have been for the last two generations. All of those countries will be below the replacement rate within 20 years. Many of them are already below. The countries below the replacement rate, like Brazil, Uruguay, Costa Rica, Puerto Rico, send us very few immigrants as it is right now. Mexico is right at the replacement level now, has had a very steeply declining fertility rate for the last 15 or 20 years. And for the last 5 years, we've gotten a net of zero immigrants from Mexico. Now, there's a theological debate between the economists and the demographers right now. The economists say Mexican immigration will reappear the minute our economy recovers. Don't worry about it. The demographers say not so fast. It may not. If Mexico's fertility rate continues to decline and in 5 years is solidly sub-replacement, we may see a structural realignment in immigration from Mexico.
Well, when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation for just a few minutes with Jonathan Last of the Weekly Standard. We're talking about America's population implosion. It's Wednesday afternoon, February the 20th. After our conversation with Jonathan concludes, Dr. Alfonso Espinosa will join us answering the question, why do we need the Lord's Supper then in hour two of Issues, etc. on this Wednesday? Pastor Peter Bender kicks off a four-part series on the office and responsibilities of the pastor today, instruction in Christian doctrine and confession and absolution, catechesis and confession, to kick off our series on the responsibilities and office of the pastor with Pastor Peter Bender in Hour 2 of Issues, Etc. Stay tuned.
Baby, let's go. Where we get the money, honey, I don't know. One more baby's all right by me. Just add another limb to the family tree.
South Africa,
China,
Germany,
Trinidad and Tobago.
Did you know that people listen to Issues Etc. around the world? India,
Sweden, Egypt,
France, Turkey,
Japan, Australia,
Canada, United Kingdom,
Hong Kong, Austria,
Finland, Malaysia,
Singapore, Bulgaria,
Korea, Brazil.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Help us proclaim Christ to the world.
The Philippines,
Mexico,
Spain,
New Zealand,
Kuwait.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
When you need a friend, you have a friend in Jesus Christ, the Good Shepherd, and friends among His people at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, Arnold, Missouri. At Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, we offer Christ-centered word and sacrament ministry, inspirational liturgical worship services, and faithful preaching and teaching. Sunday worship services are at 9 a.m. Sunday school and Bible class are at 10:30. We also have an excellent Christian preschool. We invite you to join us. Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, 2211 Tenbrook Road, Arnold, Missouri, 636-296-1292.
The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February is a daily devotional resource for Lent titled Restore the Roar. It's written by Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Reed Lessing. You can read an excerpt of Restore the Roar at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase this Lenten devotional by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Restore the Roar costs only $2.29 plus shipping and handling, 1-800-325-3040.
Well,
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Jonathan Last is our guest for the next few minutes, senior writer at the Weekly Standard. We're talking about America's population implosion. Jonathan, we've talked about America. We've talked about several other countries where this demographic trend is pretty undeniable. Is it global? Are there any bright spots on the planet where this trend toward less and less population is being resisted?
It is a global phenomenon, and that is one of the things that has the professional demography class totally fascinated with this and has been studying this really in great ways for the last 35 years. My book is heavily research-driven, and really all I'm doing is pulling all the research that the really smart guys, you know, at the United Nations and in different universities around the world have been doing over the last 35 years. Right now, fertility decline began in the West. It began in around 1968 in countries like Europe and America and Japan, but since then has spread so that at this point, 97% of the world's population, 97%, lives in a country where the fertility rate is declining. To look and find the couple places which have resisted massive fertility decline, you see Nigeria, a couple other smaller sub-Saharan African countries, the Palestinian and West Bank territories, and that's bad. That's about it. It has infected every other country, and that's what's interesting. It manifests in Switzerland. It manifests in Iran. It manifests in Brazil and Singapore and China and, you know, Canada. And so it suggests that there's something big going on here, you know, something besides that's just the particular factors of, you know, college costs or something like that. There's something sort of in the water, if you will, something about modern life which just pushes people and nudges them into having fewer children.
With 30 seconds, what are a few of those modest and vague solutions you mentioned before?
They're, you know, so modest almost as to not be worth suggesting. You know, I think it would be helpful for us to reform the college system in some way to, you know, cut costs and help people who want to start families have them earlier. I think it would be helpful probably to build some more highways to begin to cut some of the land costs near densely urban centers. But really, my book is it's not a book of solutions. It's a book of discussion. And the two big things that I suggest are that as we think about potential solutions going forward, we should remember that, one, we should not be attempting to convince or cajole or lecture or be stern with people who don't want kids. We should celebrate their choice and say there's no reason for you to have kids if you don't want them. That's fine. What we should be doing in policy is trying to find ways to help the people who already want kids achieve the families that they want to have. And I think that those are really the two starting points for public policy going forward.
Jonathan Last is a senior writer at the Weekly Standard. He's author of the new book, What to Expect When No One's Expecting America's Coming Demographic Disaster. You can purchase this book at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Jonathan, give our best to your colleague there at the Weekly Standard, Mark Hemingway.
I'm going to go throw my Nerf football at him as soon as I get off the phone with you.
Thank you very much for your time.
Take care.